Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
I look forward to this time of the day every day. It's another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. We have so much to get into today. It's been such a packed week with guests. And it's going to continue today. We have Major League Baseball going on right now. Game one of the NBA Finals last night. Thursday night football tonight with the Broncos and the Jets. We're going to cover all that and more. Plus, tomorrow night, it's week eight of the high school football season. Can you believe that? Week eight. We'll be on the back half of region play after tomorrow night's game. Emory's going to play host to South Sevier. Carbon will be on the road taking on the Grand Red Devils. And next segment, we'll catch up with Coach Phil Howell. We'll talk about last week's loss to Emory, and then we'll also dive into this week's contest and take a look at what the Dinos need to do to right the ship. That's all coming up on this edition of the show. Let's start by looking at the Major League Baseball scoreboard. We had one game earlier today. That was the Braves and the Reds, and the Braves pick up a 5-0 win. It was 1-0 in the eighth inning. Why is there significance there? Well, the final score yesterday in 13 innings was 1-0 Atlanta. So the Braves outduel the Reds 6-0 in two games. Today was not the same scenario for Cincinnati. Yesterday, they had 11 hits. Atlanta had three, if I'm not mistaken, in the 11th inning before Atlanta finally pulled ahead and won the game. Today, Cincinnati struggled to hit the baseball, just two hits in the contest, and the Braves move on. Their first series win since 2001. That's 19 years. That's how long it's been since the Braves have won a series. Right now, we have the A's and the White Sox. It's a win-or-go-home contest, and the A's have pulled in front 6-4. This one just about to go to the sixth inning. So Oakland doing some work right now against the White Sox. We had a game that was postponed earlier today, and that's the Marlins and the Cubs. The Marlins were looking for a two-game sweep, but today's game postponed due to inclement weather, which was projected throughout the day. So it will take place tomorrow. If it's the only game, it's going to start at 6:08. If it's not the only game, it'll start at 1:08, and so the game has already been rescheduled, which means we just have two more games tonight. The Cardinals will look to sweep the Padres and the Dodgers with an opportunity to finish off the Brewers. The Cardinals, they got the best of the Padres yesterday, and I'll tell you, it does not shock me. It doesn't shock me. I almost feel as if San Diego peaked in the middle of the season, and this Cardinal team, they are sneaky, sneaky good. I love the pitching matchup in this one we get tonight, though. Adam Wainwright for the Cardinals and Zach Davies, who was sneaky good for the Padres throughout the year. And then in the Brewers-Dodgers matchup, we get Clayton Kershaw going up against Brandon Woodruff. Boy, the Dodgers were shaky last night. The Brewers had their chances, but they could not convert, and the Dodgers picked up a 4-2 win. Now, yesterday, we did have some finales, some series finales. The Astros, they topped the Twins right as we went on air here on Drive Time Sports. And then we also had the Rays completing the sweep of the Blue Jays. Remember in the offseason, the Blue Jays grabbed Ryu from the Dodgers. That was one of their big offseason moves, and he was completely ran yesterday. I think he only went 1 2/3 of an innings, and the Rays did work. I mean, top team in the American League. They take care of business. They get rid of their divisional foe with an 8-2 win. And then the Yankees last night, they delivered a two-game sweep over the Indians. They rallied. They pick up a 10-9 win. And again, that's the way the Yankees are going to have to win games. They are going to have to put up anywhere from 6 to 10 runs, in my mind, to have a chance to win the deeper we get into the playoffs. You throw Gerrit Cole one day, you get a win, you're looking good. That's the game they have to win, and then the offense has to kick it in high gear. So a lot of baseball talk, and we're not going to spend too much time on Major League Baseball today, but I will give you scoreboard updates throughout the show. Some breaking news out of the NBA. Doc Rivers and the Philadelphia 76ers have come to an agreement. I talked about this briefly on the show yesterday. It's a no-brainer for Philadelphia. They need cohesion. They need a respected leader. They need someone that can blend this talent that they have, because it seems like it is a personality issue among the team. I think Doc Rivers is the right guy for the job. Philadelphia moves quickly. Doc was, well, he wasn't unemployed very long, to say the least, and now he'll move back over to the Eastern Conference, where he won an NBA championship with the Boston Celtics. That is breaking news, actually, right now. It's being reported by ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. The new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, it is Doc Rivers. Coming up tonight right here on KOAL, the battle of the winless squads. Denver 0-3, the Jets 0-3. Live coverage of Thursday Night Football will begin at 6:05. We'll get you out to Westwood One's coverage of tonight's game. And with week four of the NFL about to begin, we'll get you set up for a weekend of fantasy football. Are there any major players in tonight's game? We'll talk fantasy later on in the show, and we'll also talk game one of the NBA Finals. The Lakers doing work last night. They held a 32-point lead after trailing by 13 in the first quarter. That's how dominant they were last night. Bad news for the Miami Heat. Goran Dragic is now unlikely to return in the series after tearing his plantar fascia in the contest last night. And also, Bam Adebayo is listed as doubtful for Game 2 tomorrow. I don't think the Heat have a chance in this series to begin with. Without Dragic, I think they're finished. I think that's the one aspect, the one area where Miami has an advantage over the Lakers. It was point guard. Dragic, leading scorer on this team, very crucial to the ball movement. You look at the three-point shooters that the Heat have without Dragic. I think the offense is going to be stale. I think that right there is the death punch to the Heat. But we'll talk NBA basketball as well. It's all straight ahead. We're off and rolling. Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back right after this.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
Let's talk high school football. Coming up tomorrow, the Carbon Dinos will travel on the road to take on the Grand Red Devils as Region 12 play continues right here on KOAL. Carbon looking to rebound from a loss last Friday to Emory, and joining us right now in the studio to talk about that, we have head coach Phil Howa. And coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, coach. We'll start by talking about last Friday's game. I know it wasn't the performance that anyone really had in mind on the Carbon side. Emory comes out. They were rolling early. They stole momentum early, and it just kind of trickled from that point on.
It was a kick in the teeth, really. Our kids, I think, maybe lost some focus just because of the homecoming week and getting all hyped up about other things than football. And you know what had happened? Coaches hate homecoming.
Yeah,
it's a tough way to coach. So no excuses. We got our butts kicked, and hopefully we can rebound off of this and go play Moab at a decent level. So,
well, Coach, I think looking at Friday's game, there's really nothing you can take from it other than the fact that you had Hayden Tallarico and Wyatt Falk both playing quarterback due to a couple of injuries. Obviously, Keaton Rich is out of the game. You're going to leave McCaden Whiteleather at wide receiver. And so I guess if we're talking about Friday, the main emphasis for me would be assess the two quarterbacks and what you saw from them in a game, especially when they were faced with adversity. So how did you assess the way Hayden and Wyatt performed?
Well, you know, neither one of them hung their head, and neither one of them quit. I mean, they didn't have much time. Emory was very, very physical team and put a lot of pressure on us. They knew that's our weak spot. Our line struggled, and they were a step off and kept missing key blocks, and our quarterbacks hung in there as long as they could. We had a couple of key points at the first of the game that I think, if they hadn't happened, the game could have got on a different route. But, you know, that's football.
There's no doubt that momentum is a real thing. And we use the term on the air as quicksand. You know, before you know it, you're in over your head, and it just seemed like everything that could have went wrong at the beginning of that game did go wrong. Still, I saw some positives, Coach, from a couple of plays, you know, at the quarterback position. If we're talking about Wyatt, one in particular, the pocket collapses almost immediately. There's four guys in the pocket. Wyatt somehow sneaks away, gets to the outside, gets to the sideline. I believe he picked up 1 yard, if I'm not mistaken. And so right there, I look at as a positive, is you got a sophomore quarterback that has a cannon of an arm, but in the same sense, he can maneuver outside of the pocket. I mean, just in that one play, there was a positive.
Well, Wyatt's got good football sense. He's a good athlete. Our concern is hurting a sophomore quarterback in a varsity football game. Again, on the other side, Hayden's typically a pretty good scrambler and a playmaker. Anything he tried to make happen seemed like it blew up in his face. End of the game scenario, he throws a ball right to the hand, it bounces up, and they get an interception off it. He said, "Coach, what else can I do?" I said, "You just keep playing, bud." And that's all we can do. We can just keep playing. And it's hard not to hang your head after a performance we had on Friday, but I think our kids rebounded. We've had a good week of practice, good positive week. Our kids are excited about what we're running this week. I think we're going to go into Moab with some positive vibe and hopefully bring home a win.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question as far as what practice looked like, because a loss like that, it's different when it's Emory, so you wonder if it could actually linger. But in talking to you, I mean, it seems like the boys have moved on. They flushed it. They've moved on. It doesn't matter anymore.
Well, I'm not a punisher. You know, I didn't make these kids run extra laps. Last week, we committed to running stadiums, and our kids were out Monday before practice running their stadiums, and without me asking them to. They just knew they needed to work harder. They ran five Monday, five Tuesday. I gave them yesterday off. We had a later night practice because of conflict in field. They accepted it. They showed up. Even though our schedules were changed, they showed up and made it work for us. And I thanked every one of them personally for making it work for our practice last night. So, you know what? The kids work hard. I wish you could watch them practice. They do practice hard. They work really hard. A reminder, we are a 75-80% junior team.
Yeah.
They're excited about the future, but I keep telling them that we can't look at the future until we finish the present. And right now, we just need to finish right now, this year, and finish it strong and be proud.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Phil Howa, the Carbon Dino football team. Coach, even with all the struggles up to this point in time, when you take a look at the final three games of the season, two of those final three are very winnable. Grand and South Sevier both are looking for their first region win. In fact, the division, it's kind of split in two at the moment, because you have San Juan, Richfield, Memory, they haven't lost, and then we have Carbon, Grand, South Sevier all looking for a win. Something's got to give this Friday. Tomorrow, you guys will travel on the road to take on Grand. It's a team that is down a little bit this year. They have a very athletic kid, Ryland Jones, at quarterback. And so when you start preparing for Grand, what stands out to you about this team and what you guys may be up against Friday night?
Well, we got to contain the quarterback. He's elusive. He'll hold on to the ball as long as he can and pull it and go. He can also throw. They have a little bit of trickery in their backfield, so we have to be aware of that. They snap it direct to the fullback sometimes, kind of a sleeper play. Good receivers, you know, they get the ball near them, they're going to catch it. I think we have great defensive backs that can cover that and stay on them. I think probably go a little more man so our kids don't get confused as far as crisscrosses and stuff like that. You know, we're home. We're going to be a homecoming team again.
Yep.
Friday, we got noticed the other day. They're going to land a helicopter on the middle of the field to throw out the game ball. So again, we seems like we're always homecoming. I'd like to turn the tide and start breaking up people's homecomings and be a spoiler. And hopefully, I can convince our kids that this week's the time to do that.
Yeah, it's always great to ruin someone else's plans, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? A little just desserts after getting yours ruined.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I think maybe a little bit of motivation, maybe a little bit of spark in these kids. I know they're not quitters. I said, I know they like playing for me. I know they like playing for Carbon High School. The proud bunch of kids, we just need to find some tenacity. We need to get a little tougher. And I know that if we hit harder, it doesn't hurt so bad. So,
Coach, when I watch Grand, and you've talked about the athlete that Ryland Jones is, it's a kid that wants to run the football. I mean, he can throw the football, but if you can force him to throw, I think you're doing the right things defensively. So with Grand wanting to run the ball and really just looking at what you guys have done offensively throughout this year, this has the makings of being a very short game, right? Ball control is going to be a big, big factor in this game on Friday.
I think so. I think if we can keep the ball on our side on the ground and run, you know, keep the clock running and keep Grand running the ball, if we can contain them and not get big plays, you know, shorter game, better chance to come out with a W, I think.
You do have a couple of kids offensively that are standouts, Coach. If it's Josh Andreessen or if it's McCaden Whiteleather, these are two kids that will be arguably two of the best athletes on the field Friday night. How do you get creative to get them more touches? I know in the Emory game, it was so difficult, everything that Emory had thrown at you guys. But is that the idea? Let's make sure we put the ball in the hands of these two kids because they are playmakers.
Well, we've put some things in this week to do that. You know, we've got some motion, a little more motion going to get the defense settling down and not putting their ears back and coming right at us. Some traps, some counters, you know, stuff that you need to put in to get the dogs off, and it does open up Josh Andreessen and Whiteleather. And hopefully we can get him the ball, let him make some things happen. We're trying to get the ball out to our backs quicker on little swing passes and stuff like that, and let our athletes just use their athletic ability to go.
There's no question that Grand has the tendency to over-pursue.
Yes, they do, and I think we have a couple answers for that, and I'm not going to give them away, but I think we can make things happen. So I'm excited. You know what? It's another chance to put a win on our belt and get these kids getting some confidence. And you know what? I don't count my kids out ever. You know, we always go in planning, hoping, and working to win. So hopefully they believe in themselves and fire off the ball on both sides. I think that's going to be the key tonight or tomorrow. And we have to fire off on both sides. Grand's a physical team, and we need to be physical back.
Yeah, and I guess we can end with this, Coach, just looking at the way the schedule kind of shapes out down the stretch. Early on, a lot of home games, but this back half, especially in the region schedule, travel's been brutal for this team, and that definitely plays a factor, and we still have the long trip to San Juan as well. And so last year, I know it was favorable, and it flips every other year, but this year, I mean, I don't think you can understate just how brutal it's been for you guys as far as the road schedule back half of the season.
Yeah, you know what, the positive about it is we typically don't take kids out of class, so we don't have kids in classwork trouble, you know, grade trouble. The kids seem to handle it. I mean, the biggest farce is the mask. You're on a bus at 100 degrees and you're wearing a mask and it's uncomfortable and it's hot, and at least it's cooler now. I think the travel will be more comfortable. We have some people that provide lunches for our kids, so we don't stop in convenience stores on our way home. We get on. The kids seem to flow. You know, they're not bad. They don't complain. They're complaining about San Juan, and it's about putting it in your mind and saying, you know what, it's a trip. We're going to leave a little earlier, and that's the bottom line. So the biggest thing is when you get there, throw it all off your shoulders and let's go play football.
Be prepared to play, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to come in. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much, and best of luck tomorrow night against Grand.
Well, we appreciate everybody's support, and the fan base that was at homecoming was impressive and very much appreciated. So,
yeah, it was a great turnout,
yeah,
wasn't it?
I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was cool. So.
Thanks, Coach.
All right.
Do not forget, tomorrow night, Carbon and Grand pregame show will begin at 6:30 p.m. on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Kickoff will follow at 7. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll get you set up for week 4 of the NFL. Tonight, Broncos, Jets. You need some fantasy help? Well, you're in luck. Joe Bartle, rotowire.com fantasy football expert, will join us when we return.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. Play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans. So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel I gotta lose my way.
Let's talk more fantasy football here on Drive Time Sports. We do this every Thursday. We give you a primer ahead of the Thursday night game, which might be a little bit lackluster. Tonight, we get the Jets, we get the Broncos right here on KOAL. And joining us right now to talk fantasy football for week four, we have Joe Bartle of RotoWire.com. And Joe, it's always a pleasure. I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you again for the time today.
Yeah, I'm happy to hop on and talk some fantasy football.
Joe, we'll start by talking about tonight's game. You know, Thursday night football, you know, I hate to be a downer, but it hasn't been great so far this year. As far as fantasy purposes in tonight's game, I'm looking at skill position players, and Melvin Gordon may be the best option tonight. I mean, I don't know. Give me your thoughts on tonight's contest.
Yeah, we all complained for the last 4 or 5 months about having football. Well, I feel like this is our retribution coming here, right? Like, we just want sports. We just want sports. Well, we're going to put that to the test here with the Broncos and Jets, which I think is going to be one of the worst Thursday night games we've seen in quite a while. And it's ironic. I actually feel a little bit different than you about Thursday night football. I've been enjoying it so far. Even last week, you wouldn't imagine Dolphins-Jaguars is going to be fun. And I know it wasn't really that competitive, but I would have anticipated it going the other direction, what we've seen the first 2 weeks. So to see the Dolphins be as good as they were and kind of see Miles Gaskin emerge as the starting running back for the Dolphins, I like that. And it's always good to have football on the timing. We have football, basketball, baseball all going at the same time. This is a good time. But if ever you were to skip a Thursday night game, I would say this is the one. And the reason for when the top fantasy option for you is a defense, and I think in this case it's the Broncos defense, that probably spells a game I don't need to really participate in or pay attention to. So it'll be interesting. Jamison Crowder is supposed to be back for tonight's game. I think that's a bigger deal. Crowder and for all of Sam Darnold's legitimate struggles this season, Crowder has been pretty fantastic. And really, when he's been healthy, he's been a great source of PPR production for fantasy owners out there. And I think, again, you look at what he did in week one, 7 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. I have to think that's going to be relatively close to what we're anticipating again for the Broncos, who have lost a lot of key pieces on their defense already. Their secondary isn't that good as is. So I think Crowder's going to be fine. I really want to see Chris Herndon. Like, I have a lot of Chris Herndon shares at the end of August, like around draft season, thinking, man, the Jets are just decimated. They have nobody to actually catch the ball. And that's been 100% true, and yet they continue to make their best pass catcher, I think, in Herndon, block as much as he has. At some point when Adam Gase gets fired, we might be able to see Herndon get unleashed, and I'm excited for that opportunity. And there's if you have a deep roster spot, I'm still holding on to Herndon as much as I possibly can. But this might be the last time I can let that leash run, because if he doesn't get involved in this matchup, I don't know what matchup he will when Gase is still the head coach.
Yeah, and you mentioned the leash. When you get to this point in time in the season, going into week four, the season's now a month old. And yes, maybe it is a little bit different because we didn't have preseason. But at this point, you kind of know what you need to know in the form of fantasy. And so we'll start with the quarterback position. Joe, give me a couple of guys that you had high expectations for that have not reached those expectations, where at this point in time you say, okay, look, this guy, he is what he is.
Yeah, it's interesting. The people that I thought would do pretty good have all done pretty good. I mean, there is a reason why if I was going to be drafting quarterback, I was shopping in that 6th, 7th, 8th round range, getting the Kyler Murrays, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen to a lesser extent, but was kind of in that range too, and Matt Ryan. Those were the quarterbacks I was really targeting. In past years, I have been all for Lamar Jackson last year. The year before that, I was all for Patrick Mahomes. There's been value in the quarterback position in that round 10 and later spot. And to some extent, I was fine with getting Roethlisberger as a QB2. I loved Joe Burrow as a QB2. He's been doing what I expected him to from a fantasy perspective, so that's great. I don't know if a lot of people are really recognizing that right now, but he's pretty darn close to a starting quarterback option week in and week out when you look at the Bengals schedule. But I was anticipating that. So really there hasn't been major changes other than the negative side. Carson Wentz just being as bad as he's been. I was still like very clearly going after those Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan types before I was going to Wentz, but I always felt like he was a decent enough, you know, stopgap if I had to. And I really didn't care for Josh Allen. I have him in a couple leagues just by default, so it's worked out to me, but that's more of me stumbling into dumb luck than anything else. Rodgers has been great. It's been great to see a Packers fan like I am, but I was not anticipating this type of performance. I haven't been able to benefit too much from it. So, yeah, I'm more or less anticipating or expecting what I have. It's just the Roethlisberger emergence and Carson – I'm sorry, the Rodgers, well, and Roethlisberger, but really the Rodgers and then Wentz doing so bad. That's where I've kind of seen this QB position change from what I anticipated in August.
Joe Bartle again of rotowire.com, our guest right now as we talk fantasy football ahead of week 4 in the NFL. We'll go to the running back spot. And one of the guys that you and I did talk about, Joe, ahead of the season was Kenyon Drake. Now, I believe that Drake is actually going to be a solid play this week. I mean, just look at the numbers. Arizona going at Carolina. I don't believe there's a defense in the league that has allowed more fantasy points to a running back this year. I could be wrong on that, but if not, I know Carolina is top three in that regard, allowing points to fantasy running backs. Kenyon Drake, your thoughts on him, not only through this week, but what you've seen throughout the season, because this was a guy that I know was, I think his ADP was somewhere around 13 or 14, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. I did not like him. I did not want to draft him in that late first round. Like, I would have rather went with Josh Jacobs. I would have rather went with Austin Eckler. And I would have much rather had Nick Chubb, too. And for most opportunities, I was able to draft Nick Chubb in the second round, so I didn't have to worry about making this choice. It was Kenyon Drake or Aaron Jones where I was kind of struggling with. And, you know, Aaron Jones now has gone off and had a pretty solid three-week start. The problem with Drake, it's kind of like the Panthers. I'm sorry, the Panthers. Wow, I should be trying to change it around. It's like the Patriots offense now with Cam Newton, where you know that Newton's going to get involved in the red zone as that guy at the quarterback position, and he's more or less getting those carries and opportunities. I think the same kind of deal is happening with Kyler Murray, whether he's running in touchdowns or throwing touchdowns to the weapon that he has. You just aren't seeing Drake get involved from a scoring perspective. 16 carries, 20 carries, 18 carries, that's great. The fact that he's not getting involved more in the passing game, too, is a bit troubling. Like, if you're in a PPR league, you would have probably assumed Drake was near Joe Mixon or near Austin Eckler. You were taking him probably ahead of Josh Jacobs and maybe even ahead of Derrick Henry, too. So it's like, to me, I was always troubled by the fact multiple different organizations, whether it be Alabama or the Dolphins, passed up the opportunity to make Drake a starting running back. And yet here we are, really off the back of two or three great games last year, trying to work our way into assuming Drake is a guy. And I just don't know if he is a – I don't know if he's the guy. I think he is just a guy. So it'll be interesting. You're right, this Panthers matchup is fine. They are 31st in terms of points allowed at the running back position. I think the Jets might be the worst. So going back to Melvin Gordon, I think he's a fine play tonight. But if Drake doesn't do anything this week, man, I don't think you can really sell Drake to somebody and get first round value for him, at least close to his ADP. So are you willing to take 75 cents to the dollar, 80 cents? Like I would be, but I was never drafting Drake to begin with. So if I had him, I was auto drafted or whatever the reason, I was trying to get rid of him as soon as I could.
Now, let's stick with the running backs. Let's move over to Detroit. It was just kind of odd the way things kind of went down in the offseason, right? I mean, DeAndre Swift was a guy that I don't believe either you nor I were high on going into the season. You have Kerryon Johnson, a guy I was super high on last year. That did not work out. And then Adrian Peterson gets released from Washington. And when you look at the ties that Adrian Peterson had with Bevel and everything else that's happening in Detroit, I guess in some sense it made sense. Now you're looking at what this Detroit backfield looks like, kind of a mess of an offense. What do you make of Johnson and Swift and Adrian Peterson? I mean, obviously, you're probably better off not having any of these guys, but if you have to pick one, what do you make of the running back situation in Detroit?
Yeah, I think Matt Patricia should be sending some of his game check every week to Adam Gase or Dan Quinn, because if those two weren't NFL head coaches right now, I think a lot of us in the fantasy sphere and probably the NFL sphere would be going, what in the world is Matt Patricia doing as a head coach? I think it's almost negligible what he's doing to the Lions at this point. And you're right, he probably wasn't the one that literally said, hey, let's invest a second-round pick in DeAndre Swift when we already have a second-round pick in Kerryon Johnson. But I just legitimately don't understand the choices the Lions front office, the coaching staff, the organization are making when it comes to prime assets, draft picks, and everything else. Right? I really love DeAndre Swift. I thought he was, besides Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins, was the third best running back out of this class. I think he's a fantastic talent. I do not want any part of him when he is on the Detroit Lions. Like, until he goes to a different team or they just have a different coach, different scheme, I don't know, anything. I'm not going ahead inquiring Swift. And I think if I have DeAndre Swift and I was drafting him in the sixth or seventh round, you have to consider cutting him outright at the moment because there just isn't opportunities for him. You've seen Adrian Peterson get 22 carries last week, and I'm disgusted that the Lions somehow won the game because now it almost reinforces the fact that this is a good choice to make, a 35-year-old running back getting 90% of the opportunities over your back-to-back second-round draft picks at the position. It's just, it's wrong. Like I said, it's a negligible choice, and I think we need to see some type of change before you can feel confident rostering Kerryon Johnson or Swift. As long as Peterson's getting 20-plus carries, I mean, he probably has to be on your roster, but I don't know if there's ever a point where you're like, yep, got it. Can't wait to roster or to play him this week. So as a running back three or running back four, it's fine from a depth perspective, but you're probably losing if he's playing anyway. That's my thought. So I'm very frustrated with the whole situation. I really think DeAndre Swift is an incredible talent at the position, but we will not see it until Matt Patricia's gone, and I just don't know when that scenario occurs.
Joe Bortle again, our guest right now of rotowire.com as we talk fantasy football week four. Joe, as always, it is a pleasure. Before I let you go, you have to give the listeners a little bit more insight on where they can find you. I know I reached out to you for some fantasy advice this last weekend. You're always available on Twitter, plus you do a lot of work with RotoWire, obviously.
Yeah, thankfully you have the smart enough mind to go ahead and not play MVS over Lazard. We talked about that fair, but... yeah, I mean, you can reach out to me at JD Fantasy Sports. Despite that bad advice that I gave you, I've actually been doing pretty good when it comes to listeners' questions.
Yes.
We also have a lot of different ways to go ahead and get a hold of other experts on the RotoWire site. We have an Ask an Expert feature, which allows users who are subscribed to the site to go ahead and submit a question for their lineups, DFS, whatever you name it. We're able to cover it. It's not just NFL, it's NBA, MLB, and playoffs are wrapping up now, so you're more or less doing DFS stuff, but even for next year, if you're planning ahead, that type of stuff. And you can get that access by free by just going to rotowire.com/free, get a 10-day free trial. That opens up the entire site to you. You can check out a few of the other podcasts and articles that we have on the site for NFL or any other sports. And if you like what we're doing on the site, great. You can go ahead and subscribe and get more money out of the site itself. But otherwise, yeah, 10-day free trial at rotowire.com/free.
Joe, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking out the time to join us. I look forward to doing it again next week.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
James up top to Kuzma. Fakes, drives, gets inside, finds Davis for the slam. Davis had a terrific first half with 18 points. James is going to try a long three-pointer, knocks it down. He's 2 for 2 from downtown. Here in the bubble, they continue their excellent play. A dominant victory led by their two stars.
More Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We don't slow
down, ain't no birds. Last night we had game one of the NBA Finals. The Los Angeles Lakers stroll to a victory. After a slow start, the Lakers come back. They dominate. And after some news that comes out today, the questions of Goran Dragic and Adebayo, the question is, how long can the Heat last? How much longer will we have NBA basketball? We'll talk about game one, the aftermath, and what lies ahead right now with Jabari Davis. He joins us each week to talk NBA basketball. Jabari, also the co-host of the Dunks and Discourse podcast. Jabari, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is always mine. I appreciate you having me again.
Let's start by talking about last night's game. And again, it started out a little iffy if you're a Laker fan. At one particular time, Miami holds a 13-point lead. And somehow, some way, that turned into a 32-point Laker lead in the second half. And the Lakers cruised to a 116-98 victory. Final score, not really an indication of how dominating it was. But what we expected going into the series was so true last night. Even when Goran Dragic was on the floor, even when Adebayo was on the floor, this is a team that does not have an answer to the Lakers' size. And in the world of small ball, Jabari, I got to be honest with you, it was quite refreshing to watch bigs do what they do best, and that's dominate inside. And that's what happened last night.
I absolutely loved it as well, and I'm going to be honest with you. I went into this series, of course, you know, I never want to, I at least do my best not to come across as arrogant, you know, like just be the arrogant, you know, your fan from L.A. and all of that good stuff. But I was doing my best in order to see the path that so many, you know, so many experts were taking with this, you know, picking Miami. Now, again, no disrespect, and obviously, you know, you hate to see what took place with Adebayo. You hate to see what took place with Goran, and you know, with obviously with the news of them being, I think it's doubtful, you know, for game two. You know, you hate to see it, but you know, even at full strength, I looked at that as a situation of like, okay, I guess if everything worked out absolutely perfectly, I could see maybe this, but for whatever reason, a lot of people were really confident that Bam Adebayo, simply because he dominated Daniel Tice, was going to do the same exact in one game, excuse me, of a series, was that he was going to do the same thing to Anthony Davis. And I just never saw that.
No, and when we can talk about Adebayo here in a moment, but Jabari, when I look at this Miami Heat team and you look at the matchup front to back, to me, there was really one particular aspect. It's been a question mark for the Lakers all playoffs. It's how do you handle any sort of talent out of the backcourt, right? That was the one, I guess that was the one glitch of hope that people had for Portland. How do you handle Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum? And then you go to the Houston series, and again, it was brought up. How do you handle James Harden, and how do you handle Russell Westbrook out of the backcourt? Now you get to this series, and look, Goran Dragic is a legitimate mismatch for just about anyone that the Lakers are going to throw at point guard. Now with Goran Dragic out, to me, that's a bigger loss for this Heat team moving forward.
Yeah, and it probably because not only has he led them in scoring in the bubble and obviously in the postseason, if I'm not mistaken, he was the guy that made the big made a lot of big shots. Whether it was in like the end of the game, obviously you still have Jimmy there, but whether it was the end of the game or to stop a big run or to slow the other team down, he was that guy. Look, I don't want to. I'm trying my best not to paint this as like, okay, there's really no reason to watch the rest of this because, of course, all of us that are addicted to this league, we're going to still watch. But ultimately, I don't really see another matchup where it's like, okay, the Miami Heat hold a discernible advantage yet. I simply don't see it. I agree with you. The most compelling conversations regarding this matchup will probably going to be Bam versus whoever he matched up with, and then the Goran Dragic matchup. So now it's just a matter of, okay, we all love the Jimmy story, but honestly, that can only the grit and grind of that can only carry you so far.
Right, and again, you cannot discount anything that the Heat have accomplished. I mean, they beat the best team in the NBA record-wise in the Milwaukee Bucks, and they did it in rather dominating fashion. Now, if I'm looking at this from a Miami Heat perspective, if I'm a Heat fan, I look at the way the game ended last night, and you think, okay, maybe Miami sort of found some rhythm, and maybe you can push that over into Game 2. I mean, that's really the only bright spot. The other bright spot would have to be Kendrick Nunn. And outside of Nunn falling victim to an illness, other than that, I mean, this kid has been very, very good throughout the entire season. And I don't know in the state of Utah how many people pay attention to Miami Heat basketball, but if you know Kendrick Nunn's story, to see him come out last night and put together a solid second half, you have to hope that that's a sign of things to come if Miami is going to remain in contention in this series.
Yeah, without a doubt. And of course, I shouldn't be totally doom and gloom. These are still all professional athletes, and crazy stuff does take place in a game, in a series. You just never know. I would love to see Kendrick Nunn continue to do what he upon what he did in the second half of last night. I'd love to see Tyler Hero step up in ways that he stepped up at certain points in that Boston series, so that again we do have a competitive we at least have competitive games from here on out. I would love to see that.
No question. Again, Jabari Davis, our guest right now as we talk about Game 1 of the NBA Finals. The Lakers, again, picking up a 116-98 win. It's only Game 1, Jabari, but again, when you look at the dominance from the Los Angeles Lakers throughout the entire postseason, Miami was in a similar boat. I mean, no team, the Heat were 12-3, the Lakers were 12-3, but no team's won more than one game in a series against this Lakers squad. And we talk a lot about LeBron James because of his greatness. And look, this guy's a top 10 player of all time. I don't like talking legacy. That's a fact. He's a top 10 player of all time, however you want to slice it and dice it. But because LeBron James is so polarizing and because he's been such a voice, I do believe that Anthony Davis is not getting the proper respect for what he's done in the playoffs. I mean, we talk about LeBron all the time. We talk about the triple-doubles. We talk about LeBron now taking over pretty much every major statistical category in the playoffs all time. But my goodness, Anthony Davis has been stellar, shooting about 60% from the field over the course of the playoffs, and he continued that last night.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned this because, I mean, to a certain degree, we all know when you play alongside LeBron, you're playing in his orbit no matter what, even if you are as great as Anthony Davis has been and is as a player. But the best player for the Lakers in the postseason has been Anthony Davis. Now, obviously, that's not a slight to LeBron James, and truth of the matter is, people that there will be people that take it that way. It's simply acknowledging how great and how dominant a Davis truly has been on both ends of the court. Outside of a few low rebound games in the previous series that everybody wanted to make a huge deal out of, even though without. Adding the context of where he was playing on the court, and either way, outside of a few low rebound games, Anthony Davis has been the best player in the bubble.
Yeah, he absolutely has. And, I do believe that when the Lakers finish off this series, and yes, I'm saying that because, the Heat are not going to win the series. I hope that Anthony Davis gets his credit. I know individual accolades don't mean a whole lot. And if you were to ask LeBron James if he wants to be Finals MVP or if he'd rather have a ring, he's going to tell you he'd rather have a ring. For Anthony Davis, a guy that has been, for the most part, forgotten in New Orleans over the course of his career, his greatness has gone unrecognized. A Finals MVP, Jabari, for someone that has performed at this level for 6 years with little recognition, it goes a long way. There's no question.
It goes a tremendous way. And here's the thing. It doesn't do anything actual for him right now. But when we and of course, we're on the same page when it comes to talking of legacies, speaking of their legacies. But ultimately, down the road, it's already having a major chip, a major piece on the mantle. I'm always hesitant to speak of these guys as complete products, especially when they're with Anthony's case, you hope still in the first half of his career. But truth be told, if you start to look at the numbers, you start to break it down, he's already in rare company.
Let's jump ahead. We'll talk about Game 2 tomorrow night. It's not do or die. There's no home court advantage in the NBA Finals. We got to remember that. But I don't think Miami can beat the Lakers four times in seven games to begin with. I definitely don't think they can beat them four times in five games. Okay, so I view this as a huge must-win for the Heat, and there is doubt that Bam Adebayo and also Goran Dragic will be out of this contest. So with that being said, what type of path to victory do you see for the Miami Heat, knowing that Jimmy Butler, who also was not healthy, I mean, he tweaked the ankle twice last night. Jimmy Butler's going to have to shoulder a lot of this load now. What's the path to victory for the Heat in Game 2?
I mean, it's going to sound crazy, but it's going to take a 30-plus game from Hero, a 30-plus game from Jimmy Butler, and Duncan Robinson stepping up. And, to be honest with you, he has not been good for at least the last series. I haven't really seen a whole lot from him. Obviously, he goes out and competes, but at least from the offensive end, he has not been able to get it going. They're going to need all three of those guys and everybody to really contribute, but all three of those guys are going to need big games, in my estimation, for them to even have a chance. And, as funny as that sounds, I say it like that and watch. That'll happen. And they'll be tying it up 1-1, heading into the weekend.
Hey, can I tell you the biggest disappointment on Miami's side of the court last night for me? It was Andre Iguodala. And I know that Iguodala did have a block in this game last night. He blocked LeBron inside the paint. It brought the broadcast crew up. They were excited to see it because it's LeBron and Iggy, and we've seen this for the last 6 years. But Jabari, the Heat, when they made this trade for Iguodala, it's not as if they got him in just a flat-out salary dump. Like, they got him for nothing. They gave up some assets to get Andre Iguodala for this very reason. And last night, when Iguodala was on the floor, Miami was minus 25. That can't happen. I mean, the Heat have no chance of winning if Iguodala is going to be minus double digits when he's out on the floor. It can't happen.
This is going to sound very rude, but if you're Golden State, there's no way that you made the move to move on from Iguodala if you thought he had anything left in the tank, anything significant left in the tank. Now, that's not to say that he can't have spots or have moments or things of that nature, but honestly, especially given how vital he was to that run, I don't think that I don't think Golden State ever lets him go or ever makes the move to Memphis in order to get him out of there and as essentially a salary dump if he could still play. So I say that, and then now this part will definitely sound rude. He doesn't stand a chance. He does not stand a chance against LeBron. Neither does Jimmy. Neither do any of those guys. But especially Iguodala. Quite frankly, the best asset in that trade was the dump part of it, was Jay Crowder. because Jay Crowder is a better player than Andre Iguodala is at this stage in his career. And that's not intended to be disrespectful, because obviously Iggy is a champion, a former Finals MVP, and a guy that is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. Regardless of what folks think, you know, he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. But right now, yeah, I'll be honest with you, expecting anything out of him is probably foolish.
Jabari Davis, again, co-host of the Dunks and Discourse podcast. Jabari, we talk every Thursday or Friday. I got to be honest with you, I don't think we talk next Friday.
Yeah, not unless we're
recapping
off-season moves and
right.
things of that nature, because we'll already be into that time of the year.
Yeah, I just don't see this series lasting much longer. Before I let you go, Jabari, go ahead and tell the listeners all they need to know about the Dunks and Discourse, and of course how they can follow you on Twitter.
Again, as I always say, it is an honor to talk to you each week. I appreciate it. We're good friends, but I truly mean that. You're a pro's pro. Dunks and Discourse, really simple. Anywhere that you go, you know, anywhere you find your podcast, it's myself and Josh Eberle. We have a great time. Two episodes a week, generally, you know, about the NBA as well as Hollywood and whatnot. But obviously, with the NBA, in all likelihood, it's going to be done within the next 7 to 10 days. We'll obviously be leaning towards other sports as well as the additional Hollywood stories. So I appreciate anybody that takes the time to listen.
Jabari, I look forward to the conversations. Regardless, we'll talk next week. If we're recapping the season or what, we'll talk next week. But again, I anticipate this series being over very fast, especially with the injuries to the Heat. Jabari, it's always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time today.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Do not forget, NFL coming up tonight. Thursday night action between the Broncos and the Jets. Live coverage will begin at 6:05. Be safe. I am out.